Thanks for joining us back on the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben and Mace back with you on this edition of the podcast. We're going to be talking about some things that we've been hearing from the players as they're making their rounds at press conferences. This week we had Lou Vasquez and TJ Ward. So some of the topics here are going to be safety competition, implementing the new offense, Lou Vasquez moving back to his more natural position at guard. And we'll also talk about the schedule release a little bit.
Yeah, and Vasquez seems quite pleased with his move back to the position at which he was a first-team All-Pro in 2013. And
funny coincidence.
Yeah, give him credit last year for being the good soldier and not raising any public complaints about the shift. But clearly, you know, he seemed very excited to be back at right guard, even though going to a full tilt zone blocking scheme is going and the cut blocking involved with that's going to be a bit of an adjustment for him. You know, he's good enough and skilled enough to where he should be able to adapt. And the fact that he isn't going to have to work on the edge now, I think, is going to bring him back to an All-Pro type level.
That would be something that they definitely are going to need, especially as they look to implement possibly two new starters. Well, obviously two new starters, but if Manny Ramirez is one of the guys, then he's kind of not exactly new. But anyway, I digress. Either way, from how the last season ended with Will Montgomery at center, he's going to be flanked by two new people starting on opposite sides at center and tackle. Definitely going to be an adjustment there with how much we know about how the chemistry involved on the offensive line ultimately is what kind of determines.
And that's why the competition at offensive line bears monitoring quickly. When we get into organized activities or organized team activities at the end of May, you have phase three, and then you have the mini camp that kicks in June as well. You know, the competition's not going to be complete, but certainly the Broncos want to have a good idea who their starting offensive line is going to be, because, you know, the sooner you can get those five guys together and start developing cohesion and chemistry, the better you're going to be. As guys will note that if you can start that early enough, then by the time you get to week 10, week 11, week 12, you don't have to speak to communicate. You know what each other's going to do. You can read what your neighbors on the offensive line are going to do, and then adapt accordingly. And in zone blocking, because so much of it is predicated around movement and around identifying guys coming forward and then attacking them. It's a collaborative effort. And there's not going to be a lot of one-on-one stuff. Most of the key blocks in zone blocking are going to involve guys working together, pulling in the same direction. So that's why the Broncos, I think, need to have a good idea about their starting offensive line once they get through mid-June and get through OTAs. Because if the competition is open going into training camp in the preseason, then it's going to be a little more difficult to get that chemistry by week one.
There's a lot of options there along the offensive line. I mean, if you just look at center, you've got, you know, just kind of going off, you got Matt Paradis, you know, a guy who didn't see action last year, but someone who is a young player looking to make a bigger impact, someone the coaches are going to look at a little bit more closely than last season. You've got the new center, Gino Gradkowski, center/guard, came in via trade, has already worked with Coach Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison previously in Baltimore, so he's more experienced there. Then you got Manny, who's been working at center previously, and that's just at center. We've got options at tackle, at guard, Shelley Smith, Ben Garland, Paul Kornick, Michael Schofield.
And when you're talking about all those guys, you've got so many potential options that obviously one's going to start each position, but some of those guys you mentioned are not going to be on the 53-man roster by the time you get to the regular season. The numbers don't add up, and certainly you can expect the Broncos to add a couple of offensive linemen, I would think, out of their 10 draft picks in the draft that comes up next week. So,
Speaking of,
a lot of urgency in the competition, not only to get that starting five for cohesion, but guys fighting for roster spots that are among the backups. And at center in particular, Grad Kowalski's been a starter in this league. He knows Kubiak's offense from being in Baltimore last year. Manny Ramirez, as you mentioned, has started before. And then Paradis, you know, they like him after making him a six-round pick last year out of Boise State. You know, it would surprise me if all three ended up making the team just simply because you're not going to carry three pure centers mm-hmm. on a 53-man roster. So there's going to be a lot of urgency toward what goes on the practice field this spring and summer.
Speaking of the 10 draft picks, there's been some chatter that I've seen online. You know, I think SB Nation did a story on teams that are most likely to do trades. Now, with 10 picks, the Broncos were one of those teams that they thought could use those to package and maybe move up somewhere. How likely do you think it is the Broncos maybe make a little swap in the trade and move around?
It wouldn't surprise me if they did, but I think that's going to depend on what kind of players fall into the 20s. I don't think you're going to see them make a deal to move up into the teens. I think the asking price is going to be too steep. But if you get into the early 20s, and let's say Randy Gregory, he's a guy I mentioned on my video mailbag this week. Let's say he's there. Then, you know, given a potential long-term need for another edge rusher, you know, is that the kind of move you make? Yeah, he's got the positive marijuana tests, and that's why he would drop. But does the risk reward ratio work in, you know, at pick 21, 22, 23? And if so, do you move up and get him? That wouldn't surprise me. If one of these mid round offensive linemen like an Eric Flowers out of Miami, if he drops, he might be a guy worth trading up for at 20, 21, 22, 23, or, you know, safety, another position with plenty of competition, but you know, there, you know, Landon Collins is head and shoulders above everyone else at that spot. And if he's sitting there in the 20s, I think the sweet spot for him is gonna be right around 20. But if he happens to drop to 23, 24, you know, then maybe you look to move up there. There's, you know, those are some guys that are possibilities. Andres Pete from Stanford is another guy, I think, that if he gets into the 20s, he's someone that the Broncos are, you know, may consider trading up for. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they move up. I'd say they're probably more likely to go up than go down, but it'll have to be the right deal. I think if they can get away with moving up for no more than the cost of a third round pick or maybe even multiple day three picks, I think they'd think about it.
You touched on safety competition a little bit there, and we discussed it to a degree last week on the podcast. But we heard a little bit more from TJ Ward at his presser. About, you know, Briley Roby possibly moving there. His first impressions of Darian Stewart, who was signed as a free agent, recently played for the Ravens. And then David Bruton, and I think Omar Bolden.
He did mention Omar Bolden, yeah. Yes, even though he's listed as a cornerback, a lot of his practice work the last
we
couple
just
of
switched
years
him.
has been safety, and now he's officially listed as safety on the roster, which is noteworthy because even, you know, even last year when he was working at safety in practice, you know, still officially listed as a cornerback, and of course he saw some time at safety back in the 2013 season. So that's where he is. It'll be interesting to monitor his status in camp because I think that where the Broncos go in the draft will affect that certainly. One of his assets is his speed, and he shows that on kickoff returns, and he did pretty well when he worked there last year. But if the Broncos add a returner in the draft, that could put him on the bubble. But certainly, TJ Ward mentioned him as a possibility. David Bruton has played extensively, has some starting experience. He's in the mix as well. And like you said, Roby, getting some reps. Moving from cornerback to safety, at least on base package downs. A lot of possibilities, and looks like free safety is going to be a fairly wide-open competition, one of several on the team.
And we talked to Briley Roby on Monday. I think this was the first availability we had with him since all of this conversation kind of got brought up after Coach Kubiak and John Elway had spoken about it at the owners' meetings. And he's like, well, I just want to be here to make plays. I prefer cornerback, but if we want to have our best players on the field and I can make impact, then sure.
Well, certainly he's going to see more snaps at cornerback because
they're not
going
to be in the base right, package.
The base package is going to be about 40% of the snaps. So that's 60% that you're going to be in nickel or dime. So
playing to his strengths.
Yeah, he's still going to be a cornerback, but you know, you've seen teams start to shift guys around like that. You know, Marcus Gilchrist is a guy we've talked about who was in San Diego, now with the Jets, who had that same kind of positional flexibility. And you know, everywhere you want to get the best players on the field. And it's nothing against Darian Stewart, but I think it says more about how high they are on Bradley Roby after a promising rookie season, and how disappointed I think some people in the building were that there were three games in the second half of the season and then in the postseason where he did not manage to play 60% of the snaps just because of the situations that presented themselves in the games, and I think the Broncos want to change that.
And naturally, one of the bigger pieces of NFL news this week was the NFL schedule release. There was a really interesting article on MMQB on the Sports Illustrated site by Peter King, going in depth, talking with the people who make the schedules and the computers they work with who do the brunt of the work. Apparently, the Pope made a big impact this year because he's visiting Philadelphia early in the season, and Philadelphia's Catholic priest did.
And the other thing, he mentioned that the emergence of small market teams in baseball, like the A's
Royals.
And the Royals, Scott Ward's own Kansas City Royals, had an impact because even though in Kansas City the Royals and Chiefs don't share a stadium, they share a parking lot at the Truman Sports Complex on the east side of Kansas City. And because of that, they can't play a game on the same day.
Because the Royals are good,
you've got to have the expectation. Yeah, the expectation that they're going to play in October came into play as well. So a few complicating factors. I think, did Peter King write that it was something like there's 50 things that they kind of put in there to work around, things like the Pope's visit? I know, Swanee and I, having spent a lot of time in Charlotte, know that over the years, the Panthers annually request to be on the road the weekend of the fall NASCAR race at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
A lot of mitigating factors when you have to factor in what all is going to determine who plays when. I mean, and you could talk about, I think it's a little bit more famous in basketball where you have San Antonio's rodeo road trip and the Clippers and Lakers Grammys or whatever, the award ceremonies that take up Staples Center.
And the Westminster Kennel Club dog show. The Knicks get kicked out for a bit for the dog show in February. And, of course, you've got all sorts of concerts to work around. It's definitely a little bit more complicated in the NBA, but the NFL does have its share of moving parts. And then one thing they mentioned, they wanted to get Philadelphia on in prime time to start the season because of all the changes on the Eagles roster this year. I wonder if there were some other factors that weren't mentioned. You know, we now see that Greg Hardy has a 10-game suspension. And lo and behold, he's going to be in the lineup for the Cowboys and eligible to play when they take on Carolina on Thanksgiving Day. I mean, I wonder if there were a few things like that, and even people looking ahead for Peyton Manning, the possibility of of breaking the league yardage record and doing so against the Packers
or the Colts
in Week 8, or the Colts in Week 9. Those possibilities are in play as well, and you can't help but wonder if some of those were among the things that the NFL put in to the computers and said we need to have these. But in recent days, a computer barfed out a schedule that worked for everybody, and that's why they were able to reveal it on Tuesday. And I think the Broncos, they knew it was going to be rigorous, and based on the opponents that were on the slate. But at the same time,
you do well. You have tough opponents,
right? And no three-game road trips this year like there were last year. You do have a stretch of four road games in 5 weeks at the beginning of the season. But I think it's actually nice for the Broncos to not have anything more than a two-game road swing. And I also like that for them having four of the first six and five of the first eight on the road. So you've got a nice backloaded home schedule. And then if you're fighting for the playoffs at the end of the year, coming home to take on the Bengals and the Chargers, those are two traditionally tough opponents. And, they've both beaten the Broncos in the last 2 years. But having them at home at crunch time, I think, is going to give the Broncos a little bit of an advantage.
As for primetime matchups, there's going to be five nationally televised games, starting with week two, facing the Chiefs on the road in Kansas City. Nice to get that road game in Kansas City out of the way. Last year, it was a little bit cold, a little bit windy, some snow falling right before the game started. Getting that in September is probably going to be a little bit more favorable than last year's timing.
Yes, I mean, really, there's the only bad weather road games that you're looking at potentially are in Chicago in November, and that could go either way. You're still at the time of year where you might get a 55, 58 degree day, and then at Pittsburgh in December in week 15, it's not just the city and the climate, but also that field usually is in pretty bad shape by that point, because you're coming a couple weeks after the high school championships that are played on Heinz Field. Of course, that turf gets a lot of wear and tear and a lot of use over the course of the year, because the University of Pittsburgh plays its games there as well as the Steelers. So you can expect a pretty slow track when the Broncos make their first trip to Pittsburgh in 9 years. They've never gone, they've gone 9 years between Pittsburgh trips once before, and that was from 1997-06. A quirk of the schedule that the Broncos haven't been to Pittsburgh for so long, but it'll be good to go back. And Pittsburgh's a good town, and it was one of the games that clearly CBS wanted for its late afternoon window. They want to throw that one in the spotlight.
As we get close to wrapping this podcast up, Periscope users, be sure to send in some questions. We'll answer them at the end here. But yes, a lot of the teams are teams the Broncos don't really face often. This will be Aaron Rodgers' first trip to Sports Authority Field at Mile High.
As a starter. He has been here as a backup. In
he hasn't 07. Played.
Hasn't played, and it's the first Manning-Rodgers game since 2008, which was Rodgers' first season as a starter. And even though the Packers struggled to an injury-riddled 6-10 finish that year, Rodgers and the Packers got the better of the Colts that day at Lambeau Field. So certainly Manning will be looking to even the scales on that one. Obviously Manning Brady at the end of November. That's
Thanksgiving weekend.
Yep, end of Thanksgiving weekend, Sunday night in the spotlight. That's going to be a big one. But I think Manning Rodgers, just because of the rarity of that matchup, I think when I look at the home schedule, I say that's the game that's above all others. And of course, I'm going to warn you, Broncos fans, there's going to be a lot of Packers fans that make it in there, because somehow, some way, Packers fans manage to get 2,000 or 3,000 people in the building, even when it's the toughest of tickets. It's just how they are. So Packer fans are everywhere. So you're gonna have a little bit of cheering for the road team, but hopefully Broncos fans, you won't sell your tickets, at least not to Packers fans, and you'll make sure that building is as orange as possible for that one.
So as we wrap this up, Scott, have we had any questions?
Impact this year, and what do you think his impact is going to be, and then is he worth drafting in fantasy?
Well, we talked to Kotomi a little bit previously, and this was before Emmanuel Sanders began talking about his changing role in the offense and the trips, three wide receiver sets. Sanders said that he would be looking, or he's been told that he'll be playing in the slot a little bit more. Cody Latimer's size plays into the outside spot, and so if he works his way up into the depth chart, he could be on the outside there. I can't really speak to the fantasy value, but
Well, on a fantasy value, a lot of that's going to be based upon how many snaps he gets. And with the Broncos, you know, going getting set to use the fullback more often and having some two tight end sets, you know, I don't think you're going to see as many three wide sets from the Broncos as they had in previous years. So maybe that's going to limit the number of plays Cody Latimer gets. Maybe you're talking about anywhere from 35 to 55% of the snaps, depending on the game. So not a high fantasy pick, but maybe, you know, a late round option, because certainly when he's out there, the Broncos are generally going to be in passing situations, and yeah, he might prove himself to be an effective red zone target with his size and his hands and his ability, you know, to make plays in tight coverage and be physical. So, you know, I'd say he's worth a late round flyer in fantasy, and then if something does happen, you know, to Emmanuel Sanders or Demaryius Thomas and they get hurt, I think he's going to be in position for bigger numbers. I think he's I think he's ready for that.
He did go to the Duke workout that Peyton Manning and his brother organized. So he has put in the groundwork, I think, to have the chemistry that is so necessary when you're playing with Peyton Manning as one of his receivers. That could be key. Last year, you know, being drafted, you're going to miss that camp. It's before it. So with this kind of foundation beneath him, he could be setting himself for a bigger year. Coach Kubiak has said that, you know, he liked him when he was with the Ravens when they were doing their draft prep. So obviously they like to see him maybe do a little bit more work in this offense. He could be setting himself up for a bigger year.
Obviously know the differences in terms of as a coworker between Kubiak and Fox, but someone said, what can fans expect just on the field, maybe the way we approach game day, or, you know, what kind of differences do you think, if any, the fans will be able to see almost right out of the box?
Well, start with the fact that Kubiak is going to be active in play calling. Now, you know, that responsibility is going to be shared among Kubiak, offensive coordinator Rick Dennison, and quarterback's coach, passing game coach Greg Knapp. But, you know, Kubiak has often said that he likes to be involved in play calling. That's something he enjoys doing. So I think you're going to see him, you know, be more active in the offense, whereas John Fox, you know, was, you know, basically kind of overseeing the whole thing and let the guts of the play to play management fall upon coordinators Adam Gase and Jack Del Rio last year. I think that's going to be a change. Other than that, I don't necessarily think that, you know, it's going to be evident in terms of what fans see, but to me, the play calling and his direct involvement in the offensive play calling is going to be the biggest difference. And I think also sometimes you're going to see Kubiak, you know, talk to Peyton Manning during games and give him some more feedback, whereas John Fox, again, just kind of oversaw everything as a head coach.
I think that's going to wrap it up for us. We're about 15 minutes away from John Elway doing a press conference for the media here at Dove Valley. As we get closer to the draft, as the first steps towards implementing a new offense and defense have taken shape in the meeting rooms and the locker rooms. So we'll be live on the site with video coverage of Elway's taking questions and speaking about these topics. For Ben and Mace, thanks for joining us on the podcast. We'll have this posted on the website soon, and we'll catch you on next week.
What do you think about everything? You know, I think that look at all the scenarios. Obviously, we got a week to go, so we'll look at all the different scenarios and look at the possibilities. We do have some ammunition, and which is good. So, but you know, you never have enough of them either. So, you know, sometimes the more bullets you have, the more chances you have to be successful. So, there's two theories of thought there. It's always expensive going up, though. Well, I mean, I think the key thing is you look at every scenario, but I will say this, it's not as easy to move picks and to move around. You just don't do it. You just say, okay, I decided, you know what, in the fourth round we decide we're going to move back. You know, so you can't, it's not as easy as everyone thinks. Everyone thinks, well, yeah, they ought to just move back. Well, it's not that easy. You got to find a partner that wants to move back, and depending on what the compensation is, moving back. So there's a lot of scenarios to that. Or even moving up, you know, what the price is moving up. So, you know, I think that hopefully we can help our football team. We do have a lot of picks. We do have a good football team. So that's a challenge. But the key thing is we still have to continue to build through the draft. And you know, I'm fortunate with a great staff, Matt Russell, Tom Heckert, and the scouting staff have all done a tremendous job. So You know, it's our time of the year that we have to shine and hopefully find the right guys. You know what? We are wide open to everything. We never really lock into anything. You know, I think that as much as we go in with a plan, that plan always changes because of the fact of different things that go on during the draft. So what we try to do is cover all situations and again, really, you know, try to find football players that are going to make our football team and make us better, regardless of what the position is. And if they make our football team better, we'd rather be, real strong at one position. And if we're not as strong at another one, but be able to make sure that we know we got a good football player, we'll do that. We want guys that not only are going to help us and be good football players, whether it be offense or defense, but especially when they're young, they got to be able to contribute on the offense or on the special teams. Now, that gets more difficult when you have a better football team. And when you have we're very fortunate to have a pretty good football team. So the competition when they do come in here is severe. And there's going to be a lot of competition for them. And that's the way we want it. And so hopefully we can have guys that come in here not only compete for jobs, but make the guys that are here better too. You know, there's a lot of factors that contribute to how much a young guy is going to be able to contribute, coming out of college right away compared to his second year. When we project guys in the draft and being able, are they going to be starters in their second year? That's how we try to project guys. We don't think about them coming out being starters right away, but when we grade them, that's what our projection is. Can they be a starter by their second year? And that's how we grade off of them. So you're getting back, there's a lot of different factors. I think, you know, with where we were at the wide receiver position, and what we were doing, a lot of combinations of different things of why Cody didn't play. But I think the expectations are that he'll, having that year under his belt, will contribute more this year.